We are trying to study those consistent patterns and laws which exist in the spiritual life as well as in any kind of activity or in any other sphere or science. And the first and foremost task of a science is revealing and studying the laws in the sphere which the science is studying. This is one of the main tasks, because knowing the laws, we can avoid many mistakes which can an inexperienced person easily make. And today I'd like to speak with you on a very delicate matter. There is a law which I will quote now, and it seems to me that this law hits the very essence of a person's soul. Here it is. How can you believe who receive honor from one another? I didn't expect it. It is so good when I'm giving a lecture and then there is a great audience with panegyrics and with praise. They say you're the best in the world. Of course, they don't say it, but they mean it. So now we read such a terrible thing in the gospel. How can you believe who receive honor from one another? But I am a believer. So what that people praise me? I like it. But it turns out that this is one of the most serious laws of the spiritual life. And I can learn about it only if I look inside myself. The more I like praise, the more I suffer because of defamation and reproach, because they are on the same plane but with a different science. So the more I'm looking for praise, the more I suffer from defamation, from reproaches, because the plane is the same and the magnitude is the same. If you don't want to suffer, if you want, like Pushkin said, to be indifferent alike to praise or blame, you shouldn't accept praise inside you, and then you will suffer so much less when you hear than you were insulted, you were called a fool. So we have a lot of passions, so we give people awards, and of course those people who are public people, who are in authority, they get all the praise in the world because they are best seen. But you should remember, if you don't want to suffer, you shouldn't accept praise. But this law speaks of something even more serious. It turns out the more or the harder I'm looking for praise, the more I'm testifying in favor of the fact that my faith is either weak or I have no faith at all, because the honor which we receive from people and from God, they contradict each other, because when one is looking for people's praise, this is a vice, this is a passion, and a person who wants to get united with God, to get God's glory, which is the same, this person should avoid people's praise as hard as they can, especially when you get higher on your career ladder. I don't know what future beholds for you. Maybe you will be great monks or archbishops Or maybe when you make miracles in the future and people speak of you, oh, he's so great, so then you should recall it. So this is a disaster for a person, because when a person is looking for people's glory, this is the first sign of their spiritual default. It means that I don't trust God anymore if I'm looking for people's glory. So this is the criterion for me to evaluate myself. And I'd like to say, please don't evaluate other people. We are not judges. We shouldn't pass our judgments on other people, but we should judge ourselves. And we should always remember that the faith is killed in its root when a believer, an Orthodox Christian, is looking for people's glory. So, if I know this law, I understand what I face, what I'm looking for. Because the measurement is the same. So either I'm going to use everything, all the efforts that I have seeking for people's glory or for God's glory, because there is only one soul that I have. We can often contemplate vain people, and sometimes it is so obvious to everyone. And you know what happens to their faith, at least to the extent that we can see. This faith just is blown out. This is one of the most serious laws which teaches us to the state of our soul. How can you believe who receive honor from one another? Who are you looking honor from? I mean, come on, in the famous classics we hear that a character was worried what a princess would say about them, but here, not even princess, you know. So, as Romans said, who can judge? Who can judge? Especially, so the higher you climb the career ladder, you can watch attentively and you will see how many flatterers there are, how many liars there are, because flattery is a lie, and they will keep saying you these sweet words, you know. And this is a sign of even madness, not even of the absence of faith, is to actually accept it, that you're the best in the world, you know, and you're all over in this sweetness and you're so happy. So who can judge? So you see what an interesting kind of a law. It is especially useful. So please keep it in mind. In this spiritual life, the knowledge of this law is very important, but it will help you only when you apply this law to yourself. So any of these laws that we are discussing, we should apply to ourselves, because one of our greatest temptations is to apply it to other people. So just take a look at him or at her. So you remember, I keep saying that all the people around me are no good, but I'm the best, and they even won't get saved. So, you see, we are so damaged, and we have some illusions, so we don't see the reality. We don't see the reality about ourselves. This is one of the very serious laws. Here is one more. This law was put by Isaac Sirin. So I don't mean that he put it. I mean, we hear it everywhere, but I just quote you one of the Holy Fathers because I want to demonstrate you some authority for one thing. And besides, they always put this law very strongly. So, of course, we have so many merits and virtues as all the Christians are, and that's why so many people join cults instead of Christianity. So Isaac Sirin says, those who do something good for the sake of reward change very soon. He put it mildly. We would speak stronger. So those people who want to get reward, and when he says reward, he doesn't just mean that when I'm ready to do something good to someone and at the same time I expect that they will do something good to me, but 10 times more. So of course, this happens too. I do it out of self-interest, but that's not the only thing that is meant here, because this is clear, this hypocrisy and self-interest, it is clear when I'm not actually doing something good, but when I'm trying to earn something in this false way. But Saint Isaac Sirin means deeper matters, and he speaks a lot about it. What does he mean by saying a word? He means a word in heaven. But what does he mean? Of course, when I donate money to the beggars, I give money to the whole group of beggars, and what do I expect from God? I expect a million, because I gave a little bit and now I expect much more. That's what we spoke about at our lectures. This is a terrible idea of rewards. What does it mean? Reward presupposes that you will get something instead of something good you did. Of course, we should do some good things. We should be merciful, as our Lord says. The Lord rebuked the hypocrites so many times in Gospel. And even if we do something expecting to get something from God later on, it turns out that this person cannot be firm in their virtue, because this person becomes a business person, as Хомяков said when he wrote about Catholicism. He said that the major principle of it was credit and debit. So I do something for God's sake, and I expect that God will give me something back, and I'm waiting for it. So I'm such an ascetic, but suddenly I can't see people's souls. So what's wrong? Do you remember Luther, who started his ascetic activity, and he wrote in a letter to his spiritual father, he said, I've been praying for so many years and nothing. I don't know what he expected. I don't know, really. He expected for some divine gifts, and he was so surprised, and he had some doubts because of it. God forbid to do something good in order to get something in return. I give you something and you give me something back. But what should we do? There is a commandment for us to do good things to each other. So it's very important here to realize that we should do something in order to fulfill a commandment. A commandment is a kind of a law. But what sort of a law is it? It is the testimony of what is the normal nature of a person. It is normal for a person to be merciful. It is a norm, and we should strive for that norm. And I don't need money, but I expect something like a gold rain from heaven. We shouldn't be surprised that this feeling appears in our souls. It appears because our state is sinful, because as it seems, I'm doing something good and I expect something back. But I must fight this feeling. I must realize that I have it, and I must say, God, forgive me, it is my disease, because unselfishness has been always valued even among us who are sinful people, and of course it is the more valued in God's eyes, not because we would like to get some reward or the kingdom of heaven. How do many people understand what the kingdom of heaven is? They think it is some reward, but it is not so. The kingdom of heaven is the healed person's soul where God can be, and only in such a soul can be God. And when a soul is being healed and cured from this sinful states, then God opens up in this soul, and this is our great problem, and this is our disease, that we expect rewards, because this results in vanity, because this makes me selfish. When we come across some words or teachings in the Holy Scripture or in the books by Holy Fathers, and when we read that sometimes there will be some reward, we must realize that what is actually meant. Do you remember me quoting you a whole number of Holy Fathers who said that all this is said for the sake of simple people, you know, because they don't understand. They would ask, what should I do good things for? So we should do good things for love, for the sake of love, for the sake of God. When we love someone, so and why do we want to do something for them? And sometimes we do something good for a person who has absolutely nothing, and we love that person. So do we expect something back? No, we don't. We do something good just because we love that person. In the same way, we shouldn't expect anything from God, because God is inside our heart, and we will have our heart and soul healed, and it will recover from sin, and God will open up inside us. So we should do it for the sake of the commandment itself and not in order to get some reward. So the reason why Isaac Sirin writes his words, which we should always remind people of, it is not a virtue that is rewarded, and not the hard work undertaken for its sake, but the humility that is born from them is rewarded. So humility is being born when we do something selflessly, when we fight the feeling that we would like to get something from God, some reward. And the humility is being rewarded, but not the virtue or hard work, because if there is no humility born as a result of these good deeds, then all these good deeds are in vain. So it is worth nothing. So we ruin our good deeds when we do them in order to get reward, because God is love and He set us an example. So did He want something back when He gave His Son to suffer for us? No. But furthermore, there's one more point in this law that might come in handy to you, because you might have to deal with people who often help the church. And there are the following words: a person who stands in their virtue without grief has the open door of pride. So when I do something for the sake of reward, do you understand what it means? I see that I do something good, and when I do something good, isn't it clear who I am? So it is pride, and for that reason, sometimes God leaves a person who does something good in order for that person to see who they are without God, and that person has grief, problems, and I often come across such people who turn to Christianity, came to church, they do many good things, and they can't understand what's going on. So everything was great, and then I turned to church, and in my life, there started a disaster after disaster. So you should realize, thank God, it is the best sign that maybe these good deeds of ours will be accepted by God. And the best result is that this person will not be proud because of their good deeds, because our sorrow stops this feeling of self-satisfaction, and this sorrow stops this terrible passion of vanity, which later results in pride. You see what the interesting laws they are, and we should know them, and we should keep preaching about them. So please speak of these things. Please don't say any empty words. When people are trying just to say beautiful words, well, they are so beautiful, and all my soul is melting because of these sweet empty words. But we should give people some useful information. Here's one more law. According to the firm law of ascetics, the abundant realization and feeling of your own sinfulness, gifted by God's grace, precedes all the rest of divine gifts. Do you see what comes first and what comes next? What is the first gift? It is the abundant realization and awareness of my sinfulness. I shouldn't pretend in front of God who sees my soul. When I say, oh, I'm so sinful, but I'm thinking, oh, I'm such a nice person. You see, but I must see that I'm sinful, and this is the first step of the spiritual life. So the first step is not about God's gifts. It's not about some feelings or consolations, but it is about seeing my sinful state. And if I don't see it, if I'm excited, all over excited, have too many emotions as a result of my spiritual life, I must be alarmed at once. I must run and search into the books by Holy Fathers what's wrong with me. You see, in other words, this is the law that Peter Damaskin put very well. He said that the first sign of the beginning of the spiritual health of a soul is seeing our sins, which are as many as the grains of sand. And here's where the depths of our soul are getting opened, and they were closed before. So this is the necessary awareness, without which we can't even speak about any spiritual life or spiritual gifts. But who are we talking about here? We are talking about people who would like to get united with God. But you know what's curious? It's curious that there are less and less people of the kind. You know, people don't care about God. The only thing they care about is that their life is good and prosperous. I am well and happy. What sort of God's gifts do I need? So do you see? So this is about the dead people, the people who are spiritually dead, people who are not looking for the kingdom of heaven, but the people who are actually seeking the kingdom of heaven and who decide to undertake this path of the right Christian life. Must know for sure that this spiritual life starts with me seeing my sinful state and with the humility, and I should see and become aware of my sinfulness more and more, and of my sinfulness and not of sinfulness of the people around me. There are people who detain themselves from prodigal thoughts and dreams, but they disregard the importance of also detaining from the thoughts and dreams about greediness and vanity. What an interconnection! I thought this was also about prodigal thoughts. No! So what is the connection? And they enjoy the thoughts and dreams about greediness and vanity. What a connection! There we face simply a carnal thing, and here come greediness and vanity. But according to the spiritual law, the thoughts and dreams about property and rewards and glory from people are the same prodigal thoughts. According to the spiritual law, a person who enjoys vanity and other sinful thoughts and dreams never gets freed from the prodigal passion, no matter how hard they try. I could never think of it, so it seems there is no connection. But this law was opened with the experience in the same way as all the laws are open with the help of experience. Like Newton opened different laws with his experience. Remember, apple falling on his head. So we realize everything with experience. And this connection seems paradoxical. But you see, in the spiritual life, there are such connections that you can't see coming just theoretically. It is so curious. It seems they have no connection, they have nothing to do with each other, these thoughts and dreams just in my brain, but they make the carnal passion strong, and a person will never get freed from it unless they stop enjoying the thoughts and dreams about glory, greediness, vain thoughts, and so on. So it is very interesting and curious, and it is actually relevant to the laws put by Saint Dorothy. He says that every passion is born from one of the following three. They are avarice, aspiration to glory, and voluptuousness. So we must remember them. And all the passions are born from these three. It is a very interesting law as well, but this is a more general law because it doesn't deal with some passions in particular, but this law shows us a general principle that when a person doesn't fight against aspiration to glory, avarice, voluptuousness, it means that this person can be possessed by any passion, by any other passion, because all the passions are born from these three. Because, you know, when the circumstances are nice, it seems that I don't have this passion. But when the circumstances change, suddenly I show this passion when I have an opportunity to reveal it. It turns out that a person who doesn't fight and doesn't understand that these three passions, voluptuousness, aspiration to glory, and avarice, are the foundation for all the passions. Then this person will have all the passions or any passion that they could never even think of. Really, they never even thought of those passions. This person can betray their friend, they can cheat on someone, they can steal something, then they can lie, because when these three passions are free, it means there is the freedom which will destruct all the foundation of our house, of the house of our soul, and you touch it in any place and it starts falling down and it will be ruined. So this is a law. And here comes one more law which was put by Saint Mark the Ascetic. Everything that happens unwillingly comes from the things that we do willingly. I think we've spoken about it dozens of times, but it is so well put that what are we talking about here? What does it mean? Everything that we do unwillingly. So what does it mean, unwillingly? Unwillingly means that when a person comes across something bad and they couldn't help it and they couldn't overcome or maybe didn't try to overcome, they were told, don't come to the edge, and they come and fall down. So unwillingly means that we can't help it, or we are trying to resist. Maybe we are trying to resist still in our conscience, but we are not strong enough to resist it. Why? Why can't we resist it? He says that everything that happens unwillingly has the reason of it, something that we did willingly. So this has a great vital meaning. It is essential, because when we do something unwillingly, it means that we are not being forced by passions inside us to do it. We do it willingly, so we can resist. We think it's a minor thing. It doesn't matter. It's something even not worth talking about, something we shouldn't even pay attention to. But it is not a nice thing. Like, after communion, what do? Well, we switch on TV. So what's the problem? Nothing special here. So I took the communion, or I will get into the internet and watch something indecent. So you can do something else. Do you have to switch it on? No. So why do you switch it on? And you see, here's what happens when nobody makes me, nobody forces me, and not just nobody, but nothing forces me to do anything. Or maybe there is some inner call, but it is a minor desire that I can easily overcome, and it fully depends on me. So right now, I can switch it on or not. That's what he means that we do willingly. It means that I do something freely without being forced by a passion or some stimulus from the outside. But all these things that we do willingly then come onto another level, because these things make me do something worse or something bad, and I can't help it, because I become a slave of a passion. So this is a very serious law. How many people suffer because of it, and they do so serious things which are really bad. So I think this is an essentially important law, that everything bad that we do unwillingly happens to us because there are bad things that we do willingly. So this is the spiritual law of our life. And here is one more very serious law that of course has something to do with our spiritual life. So maybe it's even too high for us, but in any case, we should talk about it and we should discuss it. Sometimes there are people who do not live a spiritual life, but they study the spiritual laws, and then it's ridiculous. But as our school is called the Theological and Spiritual Academy, then we have to do this. So this is one more law that has to deal with a very serious quality of a person's soul, and it is one of the consequences of the spiritual life, and meaning that it is the aim of a human life. We speak about divine love, but not about the love of God, but about the divine love that can arise in a person, so of the divine love that a person has. So why do I have to use this term? Because how can we tell apart people's love from God's love? There is love of a person to friends, family, parents, husband and wife. There's some romantic love and other types of love. But this, of course, all of this is good. But this is the quality of our nature. This is the quality of our nature that are not bad. They are not sinful. But anyway, it is not the divine love. It is very important to understand this, or at least to know it for sure. I'm telling you that this is essential, because when we substitute the divine love for the human love and vice versa, this actually destroys, spiritually destroys the great ascetics of the Roman Catholic Church. They were the great ascetics indeed. Of course, in the medieval ages, one of them hid herself with the iron chain and her back was covered in blood, of course. And what did they achieve? So I don't want to repeat myself, because you've heard it dozens of times from me, what kind of love the great Catholic ascetics achieved. They achieved romance. You can remember Teresa. So they confused these two notions. And it turns out that this natural love that we have and these qualities appeared after the fall of man, it is not the same thing. It is not sinful, but it is not a virtue either, in the same way as when we hunger or when we want to drink or to get married. So is it a virtue to get married? No. Is it bad? No. It is natural for us. Of course, we can make something good or bad out of it. We can overeat instead of eating, and that would be bad. But just as itself, it is the quality of our nature, and they're neither bad nor good. But the Christianity speaks of a totally different matter, and our ascetics speak of a different love, not of romantic love. And the divine love is a totally different thing. It's not outer mercifulness. These are just some contributory factors, but it's not the divine love. And the divine love is connected with the special experience in a person's heart. As the Holy Fathers say, the gracious experience, and this experience in people's heart, they exceed any earthly experience so much that it is incomparable what great blessings a person experiences when they reach this great state of the divine love. As Apostle Paul said, "I has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love Him." So why eye has not seen, nor ear heard? Because in our state, when our heart is full of all the passions, it is incapable to experience what God has prepared for those who love Him. So on what condition can a person experience this divine love, which is in essence the kingdom of heaven itself? Do you understand what the kingdom of heaven is? So Saint Isaac Syrian tells us about the condition on which we can achieve this divine love. And this quotation is amazing, and we should remember it and know it, because it is very important. I will read it out to you, and then you will understand. What would I like to say? Never. You know, I participated in many meetings with Catholics and so on. Never, ever did they put the question as the loss of the spiritual life. Never. So what were we doing? We were discussing some outer things of our world. You know, with the Catholics, we discussed Filioque. And I thought, okay, you believe that it is true, and I don't believe, so how will that influence our eternal life? So just regular people do not understand anything about this. And oh my God, there are volumes written about it and about the main things that concern our soul, that can spiritually kill our soul and make it go to hell. And there is nothing about it. Nothing. There is nothing on the loss of the spiritual life. So let's listen to Saint Isaac Syrian, who was answering to another monk who was his disciple. Here's what he wrote. "There is no way for the divine love to appear in our soul if it hasn't overcome and vanquished the sinful passions." So you see, it is just self-deception when a person is full of sinful passions and they think that they have the divine love. So there is no way for the divine love to appear in a person's soul if that person is full of passions. If a person says that they haven't overcome and vanquished passions, but they love God, I don't know what they're talking about. And if they say, "I love the love," I don't know what you mean either. But if you just want to say a nice word, as we often talk about love, love, and don't explain. So if you want to say just for the beautiful word, you are not the only one who says that. Everyone says that they want to love God, and everyone says it as their own word. But when people say these words, only their tongue moves, but the soul doesn't experience these words. You see how interesting it is. I think that these words of Isaac Sirin, they are the key words. If we have some friendly dialogues with the Roman Catholics, it is so important to speak about these things. It is very important to illustrate how it starts and what are the signs of the right spiritual life, what is the true divine love, and what is the deception, and what are the steps of the spiritual life. Because it is the deception when we take the regular human love for the divine love. It is like taking an enemy for a friend. It is terrible. And now I will be killed with a knife on my back. So there were so many cases of the kind in history. Do you remember Caesar, a skillful warrior, philosopher, poet, and there was a plot against him, and five people entered his room with knives and wanted to kill him. He was a skillful warrior, he was strong, he also took out a sword in order to protect himself, and suddenly among them he saw his friend. And bitterly he said, "And you, brute," and he threw down his sword. "And you, brute, my friend." And this is the same thing here, my dear friends. This is the mortal danger for an ascetic, to take these emotions, this natural emotion, some romantic feelings for the divine love.